Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are plunging headfirst into, why, a truly unique space. Picture this. Strapping on a brain-sensing headband and opening up prayer apps, specifically within the context of Christian prayer. It's an intersection of deeply personal spiritual practice and cutting-edge technology that, you know, you might not automatically pair together.
Not at all. It feels almost counterintuitive to some.
Exactly. Our source material for this deep dive is a research paper. It's called Walking in My Shoes, an autoethnography of techno-spiritual practices by Sharon Song and colleagues from Aalto University. They wanted to explore in a really personal way how technology like that Muse 2 EEG headband and mobile apps actually weaves into Christian prayer.
Wow.
And what makes this study so powerful and honestly so fascinating is the method. It's called autoethnography.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the authors, who is also a Christian practitioner, they lived this experience for 8 solid months, journaling, tracking what happened when they intentionally brought tech into their private prayer life.
And that first-person perspective is just incredibly valuable. In human-computer interaction, HCI, we often struggle, you know, to capture the nuances of intensely subjective private experiences like spirituality.
Sure. How do you measure that usually?
That's tough. But autoethnography, where the researcher is the subject, it offers this window into those internal feelings, the struggles, those unexpected moments that, frankly, traditional methods just can't really access. It's a method that's really gaining ground for exactly these kinds of topics.
Okay. So our mission today is to unpack the key insights from this, well, one-of-a-kind study. We're going to explore the real lived impact, bodily, emotionally, spiritually, of using these digital tools during Christian prayer. And see what that tells us about the broader sort of evolving relationship between technology, faith, and our most personal practices.
And trust us, the findings aren't always what you'd expect. The tech wasn't some magic bullet.
Right.
It definitely presented hurdles, offered surprising moments of connection too, but it also fundamentally changed aspects of the practice itself. It wasn't neutral.
Okay, let's unpack this journey then. The study setup involved this one author integrating technologies like, as we said, the Muse 2 headband, their phone with the YouVersion Bible app, and even a laptop for meditating with digital icons, all during their private prayer time every day for 8 months. That's quite a commitment.
It really is. And as you said, the method is autoethnography. It's the researcher's own lived experience as the data. This is particularly effective, maybe even necessary, for exploring something as internal and nuanced as religious or spiritual practice.
Yeah.
And the research team itself, it's worth noting, was intentionally diverse in background, Eastern, Western, different faith perspectives, atheist, ex-Catholic, Protestant, Christian, the whole gamut, really.
Oh, okay.
To try and bring multiple lenses to interpreting this really deeply personal data.
That makes a lot of sense. You'd want different perspectives looking at something so subjective.
Okay.
And the practices they were integrating tech into, I mean, Christian prayer is broad, right?
Very broad.
But the author focused on things like devotional time, meditation, reading scripture, using Lectio Divina.
Which is a specific contemplative way of reading.
Right. Yeah. Kind of moving through 4 steps. Read, meditate, pray, and then contemplate the text. They also used Bible apps, sang hymns, and meditated with icons, those sacred images used for reflection.
Exactly. So a real mix of auditory, visual, and contemplative practices. And the data collected reflected this. You had the Muse app giving quantitative data, you know, meditation states, biosignals like heart rate.
The numbers.
The numbers, yeah. But crucially, they also had extensive reflective journals written right after each prayer session.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that combination of the self-reported feelings and the device data that gives us such a rich picture here.
Okay, now let's talk about actually trying to use the tech in practice. Because, well, it wasn't exactly smooth sailing from the start, was it?
No, not at all. The paper really highlights how the initial phase involved a lot of friction. Just the physical sensation of the headband getting a stable signal, it caused disruptions.
Right.
It wasn't just a seamless addition. It demanded attention in moments that were supposed to be about quiet focus.
I can totally see that. The journal entries really paint a picture.
Mm-hmm.
The author mentions feeling disoriented, tense, when prayer got interrupted by connection issues, especially in those early days.
Yeah.
Day 1 and day 8 specifically talk about, like, stopping prayer to adjust the headband, feeling their connection to the scriptures was weak because of the tech issues.
And this is key, I think, because the intention wasn't just, say, efficiency.
Yeah.
It was about potentially expanding their spiritual practice, right?
Right.
But even these really basic technical glitches could just profoundly profoundly derail that whole process. Yeah. It really shouts loudly that technology for these sensitive areas has to truly fit the human practice, not force the human to fit the tech's limitations.
Absolutely. And there was this fascinating detail about the Muse feedback, too. The app gives you these auditory cues, little bird sounds, to signal when you're in a state of deep, restful focus. Mm. And initially, that feedback was helpful, but then it actually started causing anxiety.
Yes. That's one of the really counterintuitive findings, isn't it? On day 21, the author wrote about feeling anxious if they didn't hear the birds.
Oh, wow.
And even actively trying to think in a specific way that would produce the bird sounds, which, you know, is a total distraction from the actual prayer or meditation goal itself.
Wow. Trying to game the system for digital birds during prayer, that's really something. And here's where it gets really interesting, I think.
Yeah.
The practitioner eventually realized this reliance on the auditory feedback was actually counterproductive. Around day 117, they switched the Muse app to silent mode, turned off the bird sounds completely.
Okay.
And the reflection shows that this shift correlated with feeling more grounded and focused. Hmm. And get this, the app even reported higher calmness scores after this change.
That's fascinating. It's a fantastic illustration of how a feature designed to assist, you know, to quantify a subjective state could actually become a kind of performance metric that hinders the internal experience.
Right.
And the quantitative data, the calmness score improvement, seemed to validate the subjective feeling of improved focus once that pressure to get birds was removed.
The physical interactions weren't limited to just setup either, right? The author had to adjust their physical posture during prayer.
Yeah, that came up too.
Things like bowing their head, holding their hands, even singing hymns, they had to modify those movements to keep the headband connection stable. That was on day 35. It literally restricted their natural prayer movements.
Which then, kind of logically, influenced the type of prayer they gravitated towards while wearing the device.
More still traditions, like meditating with those icons or Lectio Divina, were just easier to maintain while accommodating the physical constraints of the tech.
So this initial phase was clearly a journey, marked by friction, physical adjustments, learning how the technology didn't just add to the practice, but actively changed how it was performed. It wasn't passive.
Not at all. It shaped the practice. Okay, so let's shift gears a bit and talk about the internal world. The emotional landscape of this techno-spiritual practice. It wasn't a simple case of tech makes me feel good, was it?
Oh, far from it. The emotions were really complex, very varied. There was definitely frustration and difficulty focusing, often linked back to those tech issues we just talked about.
Yeah.
The author notes on day 17, feeling their mind just scattered, struggling to concentrate because of it.
And there was this fascinating tension around the Muse scores, the data itself.
Yes.
The author felt genuinely disheartened by low scores, even hitting 0% calm on days 95 to 97. Despite knowing intellectually that a percentage score isn't the goal of prayer,
right.
There was this real pull between the sort of depth of spiritual experience and the cold, hard, quantified data.
This really highlights something researchers are exploring called spiritual informatics. It's this idea of using personal data, like from a self-tracking device, to somehow aid or measure spiritual progress. But it raises huge questions. How do you quantify something as subjective as, say, an encounter with the divine or inner contemplation? What data is actually meaningful and what just becomes another source of pressure or comparison?
Yeah.
And realizing that a high calmness percentage didn't consistently equal a deeper spiritual experience.
Mm.
That's a really crucial finding here.
It sounds like the danger of turning a spiritual practice into just another metric for self-optimization, like tracking steps, but for your soul.
Exactly. And as the paper points out, Christian prayer, from this particular perspective, is about standing before God, which is a fundamentally different orientation than just seeking positive feelings or, you know, self-mastery through technique.
But it wasn't all struggle and frustration on the emotional front. There were significant positive feelings, too. Relaxation was a big one.
Definitely.
The author felt refreshed, recharged, empowered by their prayer time, even on really busy days. That comes up on day 38, day 85.
And gratitude came up repeatedly, almost like a theme. Starting prayer with thanksgiving was a habit for this person, and the author expressed feeling thankful, sometimes even to tears, regardless of their external circumstances. Day 42, 57, 85, 111. It's all through the journal.
That really aligns with other research showing the link between prayer and cultivating gratitude, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. It's a well-documented connection.
There's also this description of a more neutral state during contemplation, which the author described on day 56 as quieting the mind and making room.
Mm.
It wasn't about emptying the mind, apparently, but creating space for God's presence. A state of waiting, almost. That sounds quite beautiful, actually.
It really captures the specific intention within this faith tradition, I think. And you see the depth of the practice and how technology potentially fit into it in a really powerful anecdote about using prayer with silent moments and tears to cope with the death of a friend.
Wow.
Feeling God's presence was still there, even in profound sorrow. It wasn't just about feeling good.
So, external life events clearly played a huge role in the emotional state during prayer, regardless of the tech. That's another point for designers, isn't it?
Absolutely.
People aren't coming to prayer or mindfulness tech in a vacuum. Their emotional state is influenced by their life outside the app. Maybe tech needs to be more sensitive to that somehow.
Yeah, I think that's right. Tailored support for different emotional states or life situations could be really crucial, not a one-size-fits-all approach.
Okay, moving beyond the personal internal experience, the study also revealed how the technology kind of nudged the practitioner towards exploring new practices and environments.
Yes, this is where we see the potential for technology to genuinely expand practice, kind of like that spirited collective definition suggests it might. A really clear example is the author meditating with digital images of icons for the first time.
How was that experience described? Was it just like looking at a picture?
Apparently not. It was quite powerful. They described gazing at the digital image, things like Christ the Pantocrator or the Last Supper, and feeling not just that they were looking at the image,
yeah,
but that they were being gazed upon in return. That's day 69, day 70. It provided this new visual dimension compared to their usual focus, which was purely on reading scripture.
That's fascinating. Thinking about how visual elements or even light, sound, smell, they're so integral to many religious traditions. Technology has to somehow navigate that whole sensory landscape.
Precisely. Technology can potentially enhance or detract from those sensory experiences that really shape the spiritual environment.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at artists like James Turrell, creating chapel spaces where light itself is the medium for contemplation. Digital icons are just one way technology might engage different senses.
And the study also involved practicing in different physical environments, didn't it?
Yes. The author carried the Muse headband while traveling, journaling about how being in new places, hotel rooms, different cities, made them more attuned to their surroundings and how that environment impacted their focus. That was around day 101.
Right. And the experience of practicing in an actual church building, even a minimalist brutalist one, on day 123. That highlighted how the physical architecture itself can be conducive to contemplation, offering a stark contrast to what the author called the distractions of the material world outside those walls.
Interesting. So the environment still mattered hugely, even with the tech.
Definitely. Now, while the study focused on private prayer, Christian faith is, at its core, deeply communal. How did that aspect play out, even when mediated by technology?
That's a core tension, isn't it? Christian prayer is always tied to the wider community of faith, the body of Christ. So even in private moments, the author found themselves spontaneously praying for friends and family,
mm-hmm,
feeling a sense of a mutual, invisible network of prayer support among believers. Day 114 talks about this, that connection is sort of always there, underpinning the private practice.
And they actively engaged in collective practice through the YouVersion app too, right? Joining a group Bible reading plan.
Yes, that started around day 88. They do their personal reading, but then share reflections with others in the group digitally. And this digital communal aspect was interesting because it was a bit of a double-edged sword.
How so?
Well, the community connection was motivating, you know, providing support, accountability.
Mm-hmm.
But it also created pressure to keep up with the reading plan. That came up on day 97.
The classic social media tracking pressure, but applied to Bible reading. I can see that.
Exactly. It really echoes findings we see in other HCI research about social fitness apps or productivity tools.
Mm-hmm.
Community is valuable, definitely. But tracking and comparison can lead to pressure or even feelings of guilt if you fall behind.
Thankfully, the author noted that having a supportive community where they could openly talk about that pressure actually helped them navigate it.
Yeah, that's important.
By day 110, they really felt that community connection was genuinely helpful to their personal spiritual growth, even through the app. So it wasn't all bad.
No, the support aspect was key.
So as we start to bring this deep dive to a close, what are the big takeaways from this unique exploration? What should we be thinking about?
I think the main points are pretty clear by now. Integrating technology into personal religious or spiritual practice is inherently complex. It's just not a simple add-on.
Right.
It brings both disruptions and unexpected enrichments. The emotional responses are incredibly varied and nuanced. You get joy, frustration, anxiety, peace, all mixed together.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to quantify that deeply subjective spiritual experience with data, this whole idea of spiritual informatics, well, it's really challenging, maybe even fraught with issues.
Yeah.
And finally, even seemingly solitary digital practices exist within and are deeply influenced by the wider faith community. You can't really separate the individual from the collective, even with tech.
It sounds like the paper is a strong call for anyone designing technology in this space to be incredibly sensitive, maybe even humble.
I think that's a good word for it. Humble. Right. The design needs to be grounded in the actual lived practices and needs of believers, being acutely aware of potential interference and genuinely aiming to support the spiritual goal, not become another distraction or a source of pressure.
And the first author's own reflection after the whole 8 months is pretty telling, isn't it?
It really is. While they found value in certain tools, they're actually considering what they call technology subtraction.
Subtraction.
Yeah. Intentionally removing some digital tools from their prayer practice, or perhaps returning more to traditional roots without the tech.
That idea of technology subtraction, or maybe digital fasting, it seems to be popping up in other areas too, right?
Absolutely.
Echoing calls to intentionally unplug, like observing a modern Sabbath maybe,
mm-hmm.
as a way to potentially deepen connection, whether that's to the divine or just to oneself and others around you.
Precisely. It's a counter movement,
mm-hmm.
almost.
Mm-hmm.
And the paper also reminds us, importantly, that there isn't a single way people connect spiritually.
Right.
It references different spiritual temperaments, like Gary Thomas's categories, you know, naturalists, sensates, traditionalists, contemplatives, activists, and so on.
Suggesting that technology will resonate very differently depending on how a person experiences or seeks that connection. A tech solution that works for someone who connects through nature might be useless or even detrimental for someone who connects through ancient ritual, for example.
So there's definitely no one-size-fits-all digital path to spiritual growth.
Absolutely not.
This deep dive has truly shown us how technology is weaving into even the most personal and, you could say, sacred corners of life, like prayer. And the results are far more surprising and nuanced than just, it made me feel calm or it was distracting. It's this really complex interplay.
It really is. And perhaps the final thought for you, listening to this deep dive, is to maybe consider your own relationship with technology, not just in the obvious places like work or social media, but in your most personal practices of reflection, mindfulness, or connection, whatever those might be for you.
Given how personal and varied these experiences are, and the clear potential we've seen for technology to both help and hinder, what might your relationship with technology look like in those quiet moments? Is there something you might consider adding or changing or perhaps even intentionally removing?
That's a powerful question to leave with. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the really intricate intersection of technology, spirituality, and lived experience.
As the paper's title, borrowing that line from Depeche Mode, puts it so well, if you try walking in my shoes, you'll stumble in my footsteps.
Yeah.
It's just a striking reminder of the value, but also the inherent complexity of truly understanding another person's lived experience, especially in areas as intimate and personal as faith and technology use.
Until next time.